Right now, free speech is under heavy attack in New Zealand and overseas, with governments constantly devising new ways to enforce censorship. To make sure you never miss the critical news and breaking stories you rely on, join the RCR mailing list today. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.
Paul Kudinek, aka Winter Oak, is a journalist, activist, and philosopher, a contemporary anarchist writer and activist, you could say. In 2020, he became known for his outspoken criticism of the totalitarianism being rolled out worldwide. On the back of the COVID crisis, he writes at Winter Oak. He penned two weekly circulated articles denouncing the fourth industrial repression and analyzing in great detail Klaus Schwab and his great fascist reset. We spoke with Paul in mid-March, not too long ago, but we thought it was time to have another chat. And he joins us from France, beaming in. Paul, welcome back to our radio show and our radio program.
Nice to talk to you again.
Okay, we were talking about the criminocracy. I haven't forgotten that word. And I'm just wondering, to start off, where are they at, the criminocracy, at this point, a couple of months on? Are they winning? Are they losing? What's going on, do you think?
Unfortunately, they're very much still in control at the moment. But I think they're panicking with regard to the fact that people are waking up to who they are and what they're doing, which doesn't actually amount to bringing them down, of course, but it's a necessary start. I don't think you can ever hope to get out of their system and for it to eventually crumble without knowing what that system is. So, that's a lot of my work is to do with that, informing people and to just highlighting information that is already available there. All this information is available on the internet, as people know, which is why there are so many amateur researchers out there who discover all sorts of things. And anybody who looks will know that it's not a conspiracy theory to see what they're up to. It's actually listed on their sites, all the connections and all the agendas they're pushing.
Do you have a theory about this plain sight? Everything is in front of anyone who wants to know, but somehow doesn't get through. Is there something in their culture that makes them do that? Because you'd think if you've got a whole lot of dastardly plans or, a concept of how a world should be that most people would probably not like, you'd hide that, but they kind of don't.
No, they don't in reality, but they hide it with language for a start. Because if you only just look at the headlines or they just look at the words that they're spinning, it's always about prosperity and sustainability and inclusivity, which sound like good words until you actually read and you realize what they're actually pointing to. Like, inclusivity is based totalitarianism. It means everybody's going to be inside their system, isn't it? Everywhere in the world, even little African kids that are currently running around completely free and happy are going to be made to connect to the internet and have all their data harvest and to be used for their users human capital. For their impact investment schemes, human capital being a phrase that comes up a lot. But it's like human resources. It's just taken as being a harmless term, which doesn't actually point to anything sinister.
It's sort of like a commodification of living things.
Also apply to nature, this commodification of nature that they're trying to do, which they present it as being a good thing in order to protect nature in a world which is run by markets. We're going to give elements of nature market values. We're going to say that we're going to enter that into the economic system. But in fact, it amounts to a commodification of nature in the same way as you rightly say, they're commodifying people and people's lives, not just in terms of their work, but in terms of all their activities, which can be monitored and measured and used for investment and speculation. And as they want to do the same thing with forests and air and the sea, with everything. It's just they just need to keep expanding their market in order to be able to make more and more money out of it through means of investments and speculations and all financial chicanery, and certainly see what the overall aim is.
It's not very spiritual. Doesn't have much of a deep feel to it. It's not very soulful. I'm looking for the word. You're a philosopher. You know the better words than me, which means that Well, they're not interested in that sort of thinking or that sort of natural feeling, because you wouldn't be doing what you're doing if you were another way. I guess I'm trying to understand what drives this sort of class of human.
It is difficult to understand if you're not like that. And I think there's most people are more, like I imagine that you would be and I am, that we have that sense of spirituality, of belonging to nature, of a love for nature and an idea, as ideal of being part of a living thing which involves all other people of all different countries and all the animals and plants, and that we want to be in harmony with that. The sense of my life is of being a part of that and of wanting to fulfill the role that I can play as part of that organism in order to protect it and to ensure its continuation in the future. But no, they're not. They don't have that sort of thought at all. I mean, when you see sort of language that's used to describe anyone expresses the thought that I was expressed, you know, we're regarded as either just mad, you know, freaks, hippies, or something very sinister. You know, if you talk about nature, oh, you know, that's, I mean, there's people out there who think that that's fascist, who say that's fascist. I don't know if they really think it. Because at the beginning of the historical Nazi movement, there were the elements who were talking about nature and organic society and the rest of it. Even though, obviously, when Hitler came to power, he left all that behind. That was just another trick, like the fake green stuff we're getting now with the sustainability and climate agenda. When he actually came to power, it was just motorways across the countryside and massive reindustrialization and militarism and, you know, and the chemicals industry and the rest of it.
Eugenics.
Chemicals are eugenics, you know. And so, but there's so much manipulation going on. And this is one of the things about this democracy is that they're constantly using labels, flying all sorts of false flags every level. And that includes the ideological, philosophical level. There's always a lot of lies and manipulation and smears that are based on inversion of the truth.
Inversion is a word that comes up a bit these days, and I think people are looking for or wondering how to kind of move out of this system, survive and be successful, and try and distance themselves in groups, communities, almost parallel systems. I guess it's happened through history. Do you think it's possible to do that successfully without having an ultimate confrontation between these two forces?
I think we have to accept that there probably will be a confrontation in the end, but I think we've still got to try and separate ourselves and set up things in parallel. I mean, obviously, people were living outside of the system previously, you know, before this one single global criminocracy got hold of people's societies and their lives. And at that point, they managed to make people enter into it by force. And I think they would continue to try and use force to keep people in it now, or to get them back into it if they managed to escape, unfortunately. But I mean, that's part of the road that we've got to travel. I mean, I'm thinking when the British Empire went into Southern Africa, and there were, we might have talked about this before, I don't know, but the Zulus and other native indigenous people who weren't the money, who weren't the system at all, who were just living their lives as they'd always lived their pastoral lives. And then suddenly they had to pay taxes in sterling to the British occupation. So in order to earn in order to have the money, they had to go and work for the British, you know, for the system. And that remains the way in which really we have to be part, because even if you grow your own vegetable and have your source of water and, you know, bake your bed in a communal oven and all the things that I think we should be trying to do together, they'll still say, oh yeah, but you know, you've got to pay this charge for this or that, or no longer, you know, you're no longer allowed to do this unless you come up to certain standards required by our regulations. And the insurance industry is very much part of the criminocracy. And so, you know, in order to get insurance, you need to do this and this. Now you need to have that and that. You need to modernize this and you need to put money into this. And so there's all these traps. So there will be a confrontation. If you just say, no, we don't care. We're just going to do this anyway. We're going to make our own lives. We're going to have a village here and we're not going to pay any taxes to you. We're not going to listen to any of your rules and regulations. So it has to be, that sort of initiative is going to be carried out, which I think it should be. It really has to be part of a tidal wave of similar initiatives, I think, in order to have any chance of working, which means there has to be an idea behind it. Something that's going a buzz, a zeitgeist that everyone's going to do this now. So I think that, you know, that comes sort of a couple of stages down the line for me, that to actually embark on that with any hope of success, we need to first have understood what this system is about and how it works. Understood what we're going to be doing by taking it on and what its likely response is going to be, and thus understand that we all need to do it simultaneously everywhere so that it can't crush it. And only then, I think, will come the time when, right, let's go for it and see what happens.
That's a big ask, hearing you say that. That's a big ask, isn't it? That's one of the probably biggest asks ever.
Yeah, well, it would be if you were thinking that had to be coordinated. But I don't think it has to be coordinated. I just think that there will come a point when there's a collective realization. So why I use the word zeitgeist, because coming back to that spiritual aspect that we were talking about, I think they don't realize these are the criminocrats, that they don't see us, they don't see humanity as being a living organism. And they can't imagine that this would be possible. They think we're just a number of individuals that have to come together and actually plot to do something together. But what I've noticed in the last few years is that because we are in fact one organism, and we do have a common spirit. It doesn't appear on the internet. I mean, we often hear that a certain idea, somebody invents something on the other side of the world to someone who's invented the same thing at the same time. You know, strange coincidences, you could say. I don't think people necessarily read the same sources saying that that's what they should be doing. They've just naturally come to that conclusion based on their natural innate human reactions to situations which they, I think it's a situation which is largely seen as being intolerable. And so so people naturally come to the conclusion, we've just got to get out of it and do our own thing. You know, if they are really aware of the stakes here.
Where in the world could that launch from, or could it be, like you said, a sort of like a kind of weird connection, like a, you know, entanglement or whatever you want to call it, and it sort of breaks out simultaneously in multiple places. But do you see anywhere in the world, any culture, any particular region where this could spring from?
I do think it's something that will have to happen everywhere. Spontaneously. Well, I mean, I think there are some places that are more, perhaps slightly more on the margins of the system in terms of their thinking. I don't know. I mean, I think we can forget about perhaps the Commonwealth being the first place that it happens, because the anywhere in the British Empire is very solidly part of that. Perhaps that's, on the other hand, that's a way of people more readily understanding what's going on if they're looking at their actual direct power ruling them. Perhaps if people in New Zealand or Australia are looking at what is the British Empire, what is the Commonwealth, what is the Crown, what does that represent? Perhaps that's a good way into to realizing the legitimacy of that power. You know, where they've where they can identify the core of the criminocracy as something other than their own culture.
And the members of the criminocracy, how do you think they view themselves? I guess we speculate on how they view the rest of us, but how do you think they view themselves? Because if they're not very deep in that sense, there's not that much kind of to live for, except as sort of, I guess, some power, obviously, and wealth and control. But that's only a very limited thing anyway, in terms of time span.
Yes. I suppose that they must see themselves as being like the elite. People sometimes use that word to describe them, the elites. But I think I did at a certain point. And then I realized that that's giving them that's giving them a status they don't deserve. And they may see themselves as being superior to us, but they're not. In my mind, they're far, far inferior because of that lack of humanity and lack of spiritual awareness. Lack of positive spiritual awareness. They may have some sort of malign sense of
that. Okay, well, I want to go there. Do you think there's an element of that? There's sort of creeping through all this? Because sometimes it does feel quite dark. You know, you can sort of sense it.
Yeah, it does. And I do wonder. I mean, I don't think, perhaps not for every level of these structures, because there are a lot of people involved in it.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people who work for this system who don't really realize what they're working for. They think they're just working for the government or, you know, a company or their immediate boss. And they don't see any further than that. But I think at the heart, there must be something mine.
Yeah.
It's certainly something deeply cynical, say the exact opposite of the truth, and people believe them. And I think maybe it has become a sort of cult of their own success and their own superior intelligence. I think they would see themselves as probably more intelligent than the rest of us, who are just a bunch of stupid sheep falling for their rubbish.
Mm. Or can't even help themselves, so someone's got to tell them what to do, and we're the people who can do that, because we're so smart, yeah.
Cool. I think it must be something along those lines. But it's hard to get inside of the heads of people like that when they're so far away from one's own view.
Where we're at now, is this inevitable, do you think? It was always going to end up kind of this way. Is that the progression of, you know, the evolution of, well, I mean, the evolution of everything, but us as human beings specifically, that this is always, we're always going to hit this point at some stage of our evolution, do you think?
Well, that's a difficult question to answer.
The reason I ask it is because people, you know, when you talk about, well, how many civilizations are out there in space, and then there's this whole set of filters that go on that if they get to a certain stage, they got understand atomic energy, they have a high probability of blowing themselves up and destroying themselves. And there's all these sort of like crossover points, intersections. I just wonder if, you know, if this was totally predictable.
I don't think it would necessarily going to happen at the time it did. It must be a failure. It must be a weak point in human nature that has allowed it to happen. But I think you could trace that back. The moment that people started, it's probably traced back to the beginning of sort of individualism, people being more interested in material wealth and status than in spiritual belonging. And gradually that opened the door for them to be drawn into these sort of systems and to lose track of their original belonging. I mean, that's where I've traced it back to, losing the knowledge of our withness, which is the word I've.
Oh, I like that one. Yeah. Withness. Yeah. Cool.
Withness. Yeah. And whether it was inevitable that we came to this point, or whether it might have been possible that somebody stopped us from going down that direction in centuries past, that could have happened. I mean, people say that China, because it was more advanced civilization than the West, could have, if it had chosen, could have taken the technological industrial path, you know, a long time ago. But their cultural wisdom said that that wasn't a good thing to do. When you have to just to make a new, and I think that should have been part of our own cultural wisdom as well. I mean, I think that was what Mary Shelley was getting at with Frankenstein, that just because you can invent this horrible monster doesn't mean that you should do it, because it's likely to come back and bite you, you know. And there is a wisdom there that counts against that kind of approach, but it's obviously at some point that's been overridden, that's been outweighed by the negative trait, in my mind, of separation from traditional society and from the wisdom that went with those traditional societies, that says that, you know, you, it's this is the right way, this is the balance, this is the Tao, this is how things are meant to be, and it's dangerous and to go after short-term goals and short-term gain just for yourself and for your generation without looking seven generations ahead or whatever the thinking was in that particular culture. I think that was generally held, that's the sort of thinking which is now regarded as reactionary or, you know, against progress, and you're supposed to just be swept along by anything that's imposed on you and adapt to everything that happens rather than question it, let alone refuse or resist it.
It's almost like you can't believe your own eyes anymore. Like you see something, but you're told that's not what you're looking at. And people seem to buy that. I think climate is an example of that. There's a lot being moves being made here in New Zealand to move people away from coastal areas because of potential inundation from sea level rise. Now, you look around and you don't see any rise. You don't see what you're told is happening. It's not happening. But people, it seems to me, many people aren't even confident enough to rely on their own senses.
Yeah, it's very true. There was a great cartoon that was circulating there during the time of the so-called pandemic of somebody standing in the sunshine, a lovely sunny day, but he's looking at the television. On the television, it says it's raining, so he's got his umbrella up.
Exactly what I'm thinking. But that's a weird place to be, isn't it? Because once you strip away believing the reality, that the physical reality, you kind of could be told to do anything, can't you?
Yeah, it's very dangerous, and it's this next step and this ongoing process of separation. It's separation from reality, even physical reality. I mean, people, the whole of this transhumanist agenda, genetically editing our physical being, and all of this this transgender thing, but there is no such thing as a man or a woman, and that if you stick a different label on it, it suddenly miraculously becomes the thing that the label indicates, which is just ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
It's a depressing point to be in. Do you think a completely inverted alternative system, sort of anachronistic system, can actually work, or will that always degrade and kind of fall to pieces? I mean, is there any way we can operate that can be relied upon for a good stretch of stable existence, you think?
Yes, we need to reconnect with that traditional wisdom that I was talking about earlier, which is perhaps where my anarchism deviates from the norm, because often the idea is to create something, to cut ties with tradition and to create a new world based on, you know, certain ideals and which I share, but I think they've got to be rooted in tradition, because that tradition is that the loss of that tradition is what's got us where we are today. And we can get this in certain parts of tradition. If there were parts of tradition that said, you know, you've got women are inferior and should be chattels of men or something like that, now we, you know, we'll modify that, but we can still use the basis of that. And ultimately it will then become this philosophy will be slightly conservative with a small c in a future society when we've reestablished something like sanity, because it will want to defend that society. And that's something strange I find about people who are conservative with a small c today, because they have that desire to resist unwelcome change and to keep a sense of order and tradition and community and so on. But in fact, because we're in an unnatural, corrupted world, they're actually ending up defending the corrupted world. So they need to, I think those people need to understand that in order to get out of this, we need to drop the small c conservative bit, in my mind, and realize that we've got to have a rupture with this criminocracy. And on the other hand, the people who are currently very, very much keyed up for revolution and change need to understand that that can't be the underlying philosophy of the idea that we want to have for the future, because it'll be a very unstable society. When you finished your journey, you stop, you know, oh, well, we're here. We're going to set up camp here now in this society. And we no longer we're no longer revolutionaries. We've now become sort of small C conservatives who want this thing that we've created to remain, and we'll do all we can to protect and defend it.
Is the dividing line between those who live in cities and those who are out somewhere in the country, is there something in that? Is that where that division point could be?
Yes, I suspect that if you're in the city, it's very hard. I think to imagine a completely different way of being, because you're so dependent on all the infrastructure of current society. I mean, a lot of people, a few like me, I can't cope with living in that sort of environment, and you know, I used to find cities exciting when I was young, and now I just I'm going to visit them today, you know, and go to a museum or something. But then I can't. It's just so unnatural and so strange. I find it very strange, a city. So when you actually live in a country, a rural area, you can start to imagine. You can start to see how it would have been in centuries past. You can see how it would be possible to. I mean, we've got local markets, people, you know, people buying their food from direct from the producers and things like that, which you don't see in a city. Obviously, you're buying stuff from the supermarket, but it's still part of the system here. It's not. I'm not pretending that it's already something outside of it. But you can at least see the potential. You can imagine how that'd be. And We do need to imagine. I'm not sure we can actually have that sort of society. We haven't got a picture of it in our heads to aim for. So that could be, yes, so there could be more people with that idea who are living in the country, and more people who want to come out of the cities to discover that vision. At the same time, as the pressure is all in the other direction. Of course, like you were saying, people being evacuated from areas in New Zealand, and I know in Australia they're talking about that too. Which is to push people into urban areas under the pretext of so-called climate change and rising sea levels and the rest of it. But they really want people in smart cities, and as we know.
Mm. Yeah, and you mentioned insurance before, and that comes into it too, because they buy in, they don't offer insurance, you won't get a mortgage. If you've got a mortgage, the bank will call it in. So you're kind of dancing to their tune.
Yeah, it's a system that they've created where they control so many aspects.
Yeah,
it's quite overwhelming sometimes when you see it and you see what they've built and how caught up we are in it. And I would never pretend that it's an easy thing to get out of their system, but it's a necessary thing. It really is necessary, and. Imagine the nightmare future, really. What a nightmare they've got in mind, that we're all eating sort of fake food and living in basically digital concentration camps, that we haven't got any freedom to do anything. We're not allowed to express our opinions. You know, they control everything that we do, every moment of the day. You know, probably people won't be allowed to have their own children, actually. They'll have to buy children from embryo factories, the rest of it. It's just inconceivable. I mean, but it's the natural ways that, well, no, it's not natural at all. It's the unnatural continuation of what we've been living for the last few hundred years. It's just like we've gone from people being taken off the countryside and shunted into factories. The horror of people working in those factories in the era of the Victorian style factories hundreds of years ago, the children in the factories, that was all part of this same process. And then we've got the world wars, the horror of the First World War, which is all part of this. I mean, I wrote a big article about that. It must be a couple of years now, about the First World War and how that was engineered by the same people, not only to make money, but to push us further into their world, into the post-war world, where the people were on our way. It's the modern era now. We had that after the Second World War as well, the post-war society in which all the cities across Europe were rebuilt in modern style, and in different habits were taken. You know, women went and worked as well as men. I'm not saying that women shouldn't be working, but when you've got two people in the family working to achieve ultimately the same level of same standard of living, then you're falling into a trap there, I'm afraid, because, you know, it's just everything that has happened. And they wanted to do the same thing with COVID as well. Of course, Klaus Schwab's books that I read all three of his books at the time. And, you know, there was this, oh, we're going to be talking about post-COVID in the same way as where we used to talk about post-war society, that now, you know, everything's going to be online and we're not going to touch vegetables in the shops anymore. Everything's going to be wrapped in plastic and we're going to have drones delivering things and we're all going to get used to, you know, we're going to have smartphones to get in and out of towns. And, you know, he was just reveling in this sort of dystopian, fascistic future that they're hoping to impose on us. And I for one am not prepared. I mean, I'm not going to be around in 50 years time, obviously.
Same.
But I'm not prepared to I'm not prepared to go to my grave without having made some sort of attempt at stopping them from doing this. And I think there must have been loads of people who think the same way.
Oh, I'm sure you're right. Just thinking of Klaus Schwab, and we'll wind up in just a moment. This is the in-your-face thing again. If you wanted to pick a villainous character out of central casting, you know, Dr. Evil or whatever, this seems to be a reoccurring thing that it's planted right at you. You know? I mean, they could even, surely the WEF could find someone who's a little more appealing or a little more sort of, I don't know, appealing to people, rather than the sort of like, you know, SS sort of feel to it. It's interesting.
It is weird. I mean, he's been involved with it for years. I mean, he was involved in setting it up. But, I mean, on behalf of other people, I mean, he's very close to Kissinger, for example. So he's always been pretty much a front man, but he didn't look quite as sinister when he was younger. I think that was probably perhaps the problem. They didn't realize he was going to end up with him.
Re-advertise the job at some point because
I've read that I don't know if this is true, but I've read that Tony Blair is being lined up.
Oh,
and of course he's even, you know, he looks just as evil, if not even more evil. So I'd, you know, that's a, yeah, they need one of their sort of young sort of TV friendly people, don't they?
One of those evangelists, like evangelists. Well, young leaders, you got Trudeau. I mean, again, they're kind of cheesy, where Klaus is more like, you know, Zing Heil to me anyway. But there's that cheesiness, which is very unappealing to me, but I guess appeals to some. I'm interested how they choose the talent, you know.
They do all look like come out of the same casting.
Cookie cutter. Couple more things. You talked about food before, and I just reminded me, quite often I come across these restored movies, you know, from, you know, Paris, 1898, and New York City downtown, 1928, and recolorized, and AI does a great job of that. And one thing I noticed, getting back to food, and I wonder where food falls into this, or comes into this, is everybody looks really healthy and trim. Hardly ever a fat person in the film. And now we've got obesity. Where does food come into this? Maybe it doesn't. Any thoughts on that?
Oh, definitely. In the industrialization of food, people were, it depends where you live, of course, but until recently, people were eating, generations ago, I suppose, people were eating healthy, natural food from more or less local suppliers. You know, they'd have their local greengrocer and butcher and so on. And then money stepped in. The middlemen, it's always the middlemen who took over. You know, they're running their stores. People thought it was great, you know, when they introduced it, I'm sure, to start with. Supermarkets and stuff that, you know, once you've got a fridge, something else to be that you can sell here is a fridge, and the electricity that you need to have in order to make the fridge go. And the fact that women were out working. I think either men or women should be working. I think, you know, I'd have loved to have been a stay at home father and let my wife at the time go out and work. I'm not saying that women shouldn't be able to work, but if two people are working in the family, then there's nobody who can go and do all the shopping around, go around all the little shops and buy the shopping and offering vegetables and prepare the meal and, you know, make it, you know, do all that work that has to be done towards preparing a meal. So it becomes a temptation just to go to the supermarket and woof, take that ready, you know, TV meal out of the freezer cabinet and, you know, that's your food. But of course, it's full of processed stuff. It's all lifeless. All the vitamins have gone out of it. It's packed full of salt and sugar and, you know, and that's people eat that all the time, let alone going to McDonald's and the rest of it. You don't have to go to McDonald's. Just if you eat it from the supermarket ready meals, you're gonna be unhealthy. You're going to be fat or ill and diabetic. And, you know.
Yeah, the whole health system, our one, but Western, well, I don't call it a health system. It's like a sickness system, encourages that lifestyle because it takes away the responsibility and the discipline to maintain good eating habits. It's designed to perpetuate unhealthy activities, yet it's called a health system.
Yes.
That's another thing that we have to reinvent, right? That's another thing.
We do. And I mean, health systems should be about keeping people healthy, not about, you know, allowing them to fall ill and then selling them all sorts of products. Because even if you don't pay for it, what your prescription, even if you know that's paid for by the state where you live, it's still ringing up on the cash bills of the pharmaceutical company that sold it to the state. You know, this is all about selling products, and they've obviously the so-called health system, big pharma, has got a vested interest in people being ill. I mean, that was you know, there was some very interesting research done in Australia by Kate. Who was on your show, I think. Anyway, but she was. They were exploring the fact that that COVID might actually be benefiting the pharmaceutical industry and the impact industry associated with it in creating all these people with long term illnesses, chronic illnesses that are going to need ongoing treatment and drugs and medical treatment. Kate Mason, she's called, I think.
Oh, yeah, that rings a bell. Yeah. Maybe on one of the shows, maybe not on mine, but yeah.
Yeah, okay, yeah. But anyway, so it's all been interlinked. Yes, it's making people dependent on the system in yet another way.
Yeah. Just to wind things up, Paul, if you understand, to use a term, the playbook of the criminocracy, can we accurately predict the steps that we can anticipate ahead, you know, whatever way we go, and use that intel to effectively push back? I guess almost making predictions. Can you, kind of with what you know and the thinking that you've done, see the likely course of this? Can you?
Well, I think we can see what they're trying to do, can't we?
I'm just thinking, what are the next moves? Is it another pandemic? Is there some sort of event that again generates fear, because fear is so effective, that sort of kind of like rounding up sheep, you know?
I guess it worked pretty well for them the first time overall. Whether there'd be too much resistance to it the second time, it'd have to be a different sort of pandemic to work, I think. I don't think
we'd have to go to the next level, wouldn't it?
It'd have to be something more. But whether, I don't really know. You know, they probably have got more. I'm sure they've got more contingency plans lined up. Maybe they'll take it. I think the last one they'll spring on us is probably extraterrestrials. I can see that coming in the end. But that'll be the final trump card.
You only play that one right when you need to.
So there's probably some intermediate. I mean, you know, we've got a bit of war going on, haven't we? And
What do you make of the conflicts? Is that part of this sort of manoeuvring as well? Because they're horrible conflicts.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of talk in Ukraine about reconstruction afterwards, and in Gaza actually as well. There's a lot of money to be made. BlackRock are involved in the future reconstruction of Ukraine, which again, as with the First World War and the Second World War, I think it sheds some light on what the point of the war was, or one of the points of the war. I think they serve several purposes, these things. You know, they're well planned out. They've got multiple objectives, but the reconstruction the contracts for reconstruction, also the loans that will be given to governments to rebuild afterwards, to build back better. That's all part of thinking. And Gaza as well, they're already, I saw somewhere somebody had leaked or discovered plans to build a smart city on the ruins of the Gaza Strip. So, you know, I think we just, if it can be alert to what they're doing, if more people can just see through it, maybe they won't be able to get away with this stuff anymore. But it's, ever since they own all the media and...
Well, they don't own this one.
Oh, sorry, nearly all the media, all the corporate mainstream media.
Well, that maybe is the other thing that needs to take place, is kind of rolling over the top or creating a parallel media system that has the scale and punch of the legacy system, which does seem to be losing its power. So maybe we can claim to be part of that, but we'll see how that one goes.
Well, yeah, definitely. I mean, it's if there were a lot more outlets like yours, then their propaganda wouldn't work anymore.
Yeah. I think we'll leave it there. It's been great catching up with you again. I think our listeners would have been interested in what you had to say there, of course. So thanks for making some time for us here at Reality Check Radio. Let's see what happens. You know, if we can come back and talk again later, that means that, well, something's still working, I suppose.
Yep. Okay, thanks, Paul.
The RCR Shop has great gift ideas. From great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR Shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.